Yes, back in studio on this Friday. Welcome in. Hope you're enjoying your day, gearing up for a big weekend. Final Four coming up tomorrow, and Purdue's in it. And, you know, there's a lot of Muncie ties with Matt Painter being an alum of Delta High School. I know there's been some stories shot on TV in Indianapolis about that. There's other connections from around the state with the players involved, and we're going to talk to Rob Blackman from the Purdue Radio Network. Recorded a conversation with him yesterday, so we'll play that for you coming up in the second segment of the program and get a lowdown of this Purdue basketball team that certainly has a big-time matchup tomorrow with NC State and an opportunity to advance to Monday night's national championship game. So we'll see what happens with that and break that down coming up here in a little bit. Ball State sports, very busy. Congratulations to the Ball State men's volleyball team. They do it again. A share of the MEVA title. They're ranked in the top 12 in the country. And once again, you know, some of the things that happen down the stretch determine what happens in the conference tournament. And again, as we know, a couple of years back, you can get to the NCAA tournament as well and get to the NCAA championship level. So we'll dive into a little bit of those topics as well a little bit later on. Ball State football has its spring game coming up tomorrow. Now, outside, it doesn't feel a whole heck of a lot like spring. But this is super pivotal, obviously, for the football team that is in a portion of their season that maybe is overlooked a lot. But I think it's super, super pivotal, and here's exactly why. You know, you got to think about the whole deal with the transfer portal, the whole deal with constantly changing your roster, and Ball State, as they did in the offseason, brought in a lot of transfers, brought in a lot of different freshmen that are going to get acclimated in this time period. You know, it feels like more and more you have players that try to arrive to campus earlier than they can. And obviously in the transfer aspect, when they commit to a school, likely they're headed to that school rather quickly. And so that's where the spring is incredibly important. Incredibly important because the chemistry, the new system, the trying to figure out where these guys stack up with what you currently have, or the battles at, you know, wide receiver, the battles at running back. Of course, you've got a transition there with Marquez Cooper in the transfer portal. So you have a lot of different things that you have to figure out with your football team. And so here's the part that I think is going to be very, very interesting. Both quarterbacks, Kyle Kelly and Caden Semenza, were on the roster a year ago. Now, Kelly was the starter through the majority of the second half of the season, and so you have continuity there. They are very excited about Caden Semenza. Actually, this was the time last year, and then in the summer, it became a little bit more amplified when Ball State brought in Lane Hatcher, the transfer, the fifth-year transfer, one of the most decorated passers and from a statistics standpoint in NCAA history. They bring him in. You feel as though he's going to be the guy moving forward. And then we kept hearing a couple of things. One, that there were going to be certain packages for Kyle Kelly to get involved, but also the noise kept growing and growing and growing for Caden Semenza, and it peaked, obviously, with game number one, game number two. He played in both of those games with the two quarterback system. Hatcher and Semenza played early on. So I really feel as though it's not a done deal. I think there's going to be a true competition here. I really, really do. Because last year, you saw Lane Hatcher and packages for Kyle Kelly, and then in certain moments, Caden Semenza got the opportunities. Now, as it went further down the line, Kyle Kelly was the starter. Now, one of the things that's going to be interesting about this football team is Kelly and Cooper, you know, Marquez Cooper, your 1,000-yard running back that, again, is not on this roster coming up this year, you had a true downhill run-the-ball-first attack. Now, I would imagine, obviously, last year when you had injuries to Brady Hunt, your primary tight end, and Tanner Koziol, you were going to play a two tight end system last year. Obviously, when Brady Hunt got injured, that changed the course of things. So my question, my curiosity is the offense going to be centered around Kyle Kelly, or are you going to try to go back to the base offense that you hoped you had at the beginning of last year and, you know, have that built around Kyle Kelly, or is it a true quarterback competition with Caden Semenza? I think you've got a variety of options to go with this year because, you know, Caden Semenza had some success early on. Kyle Kelly towards the end, look, you can't deny that you were a winning football team at the end of the year with the style that you played that aesthetically is very different than a lot of teams that win. But you were winning at the end of the year. You were giving some of the best teams in the Mid-American Conference a lot of grief at the end of the season, particularly because you were just playing smash-mouth defensive run-the-ball-first football. And so, again, this is a long soliloquy of which you're not going to figure out all these answers to these questions coming up tomorrow, but this is the first step where you really get to evaluate this football team. You have a lot of newcomers defensively. That is the area that's going to take the most transition. You have had a lot of transition on the offensive side of the ball as well, but you bring back Tanner Koziol. Initially, he had left in the transfer portal. Now he's back. So that's a big addition to bring him back. You have three returning starters at wide receiver, and you bring in others to kind of get that acclimated. So last year, you were going to ride a little bit of the wave that you had a very experienced defense, and you were hoping one of the quarterbacks were going to emerge with the two tight end system. Of course, we know how things went from an offensive standpoint. This year, you have a little bit of time to kind of evaluate, and I think there's going to be a lot of evaluation with this football team, but there's certain things that you've got to like heading into the spring and other things that, you know, points like spring that may get overlooked mean a lot for this with the transfers and the freshmen and those sorts of things. So a big moment tomorrow coming up for Ball State football truly is a lot of fun. You know, the spring games in the past never really became a huge deal. Now everybody has them like televised, has them, you know, chronicled. It's a glorified practice. You get a lot more out of it, I believe. Leave offensively than you do defensively. It's not like the defenders don't get anything out of it, but you know, you're not really going to be all that excited with a quarterback going 15 for 17. But ultimately, the drills are going to favor the offense because there's not going to be a ton of contact. That's not what spring practices or spring games are really designed to do. And so it's going to be interesting. So this is tomorrow, 11 a.m. at Schumann Stadium. Admission is free. Looks like the weather's going to be in the high 50s. So again, not, you know, 65 or 70, but certainly not the 40s and below we've had the last couple of days. So should be a decent day out at Schumann Stadium, and a lot to evaluate, obviously, with this football team, and a way for the community as well to see a little bit of what the preview looks like for Ball State football coming up in 2024. So that is going on as well. Ball State baseball in a very pivotal series with Miami of Ohio this weekend. I think every single one of these moving forward is going to be gigantic. And right now in the bottom of the fourth in game number one, Ball State has a 1-0 lead. They're pitching very, very well. They got a run early in the first inning. So this is the first of three matchups with Miami of Ohio on the road this coming weekend. And as we know, and as we've talked about with Ball State baseball, they do have to climb up the standings, and so you know, Miami of Ohio, this series is going to be huge, big time. A team right in the middle of the conference, so we'll see ultimately how all of that plays out. Softball in action against Buffalo, and that a big one for them as well to kind of right the ship in the Mid-American Conference at the very, very same time. So a lot going on from a Ball State sports perspective tonight at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. The Indiana Pacers have a matchup with the Oklahoma City Thunder. It goes without saying, based on what happened a couple of days ago, Pacers need everything at this point. I mean, it's possible. It really is that you may only have one loss in these last five games. You really have no margin for error. You may have one loss left as far as margin for error, because you do have that head-to-head matchup with the Miami Heat. And right now you're in the seventh position in the play-in. The sixth position would get you in the playoffs. So... and you're facing one of the best teams in the Western Conference right now, who's battling for the number one seed in the Western Conference. So it's not exactly like the road is very easy, but you know, the big game coming up this weekend has to be Sunday's matchup with Miami, because the head-to-head matchup is going to be massive at the end of the day. Think about if you were able to have this back-to-back. It's not a true back-to-back, but the next two games. You get the win tonight against the Thunder, and you get the win on Sunday against the Heat. That's a massive statement. And that would go a long way for you securing the sixth position. So the margin of error is very, very thin. But, man, even in a two-game sample size that you have coming up this weekend, the Thunder tonight and the Heat on Sunday, it's huge. I mean, that could be the difference. And it's very tight. The margins are thin, as we've said. But you, in a game where you absolutely needed to get the win for a lot of reasons, you just didn't look good enough on Wednesday. And it's possible Tyrese Haliburton and Pascal Siakam together played their worst game that they played together since the Pacers acquired Pascal Siakam. It's very, very close to saying that. So you want to have a better performance. And the next two games just happen to be at Gainbridge Fieldhouse 2. So can you take advantage of that? So it goes without saying, major, major weekend for the Indiana Pacers. I know I'm skipping around here because there's so much going on. Anybody watch Indiana State last night? The end wasn't great. And it's possible their coach is headed to another school. Josh Schertz, who... should be considered for coach of the year in the country. I know he was mid-major coach of the year, but nobody did a better job than Josh Schertz at Indiana State. Indiana State had a 7-point lead with under 3 to play and lost the basketball game against Seton Hall in the NIT championship. But you watch that game, and I think Seton Hall has probably the same gripe as well. They're likely the two teams that were the first two out of the NCAA tournament. You know, you go back to Virginia getting in over Indiana State. Well, Seton Hall felt the exact same way, that they had played a stronger schedule, proved themselves more than Virginia. And honestly, if you look at those three schools side to side to side, it's very hard to argue with that logic. So, you know, Seton Hall, I want to give them an immense credit. Because this day and age in college basketball, how many teams declined the opportunity to play in the NIT because they didn't make the NCAA tournament? It feels like it's you make the NCAA tournament or you don't play. And Seton Hall is a little bit of a veteran team, and they're in a power conference. And they could have taken the route like others to say, yeah, we're not playing in the NIT because we didn't make the NCAA tournament. We're bummed by that. They instead went the distance and won the NIT tournament. And you might say, what does that really matter? It's an opportunity to still play together. It's an opportunity to win a championship. It's an opportunity to, I don't know, keep playing. there's a lot of different benefits from it all. And so you got to give Seton Hall credit. Tough way to end for Indiana State, but I think they proved their point. If it was part of proving why they were worthy for an NCAA tournament, or why they were, because as many people in this state, and again, we're inundated with you know, state of Indiana people that have watched Indiana State, maybe an alum, and there's a certain bias when you come from your own community. I get that. I understand that, or your own state in that matter. But there were just as many people supporting Indiana State as there was pointing to their quad one losses, or, oh man, Power 5 Seton Hall or Power 5 X should have gotten in over them. And so, in a way, they were able to make a statement by going against Power 5 schools to get to the point that they got to at the NIT championship. So I don't think that that was the whole deal with Indiana State playing in the NIT, but I thought that they represented themselves incredibly well. And maybe that wasn't the goal at the end of the day, but in some way, form, or fashion, I think it was a net positive for Indiana State. What might be tough about it is, whether you played in the NIT or not, it's possible you're going to lose your coach. Feels like Josh Schertz is going to take that job. It hasn't been confirmed, but at the end of the day, there's many reports out there that he would go to St. Louis. So we'll see how that plays out. But I still stand by feeling as though that Indiana State should have been a tournament team. Absolutely should have been. And if you want to say they got robbed, okay, whatever. I guess I would subscribe to that theory in a lot of ways. So coming up here in a moment, we're going to play a conversation with Rob Blackman, Purdue Radio Network. It is Purdue NC State tomorrow in the Final Four, and NC State is an 11 seed. It's certainly no typical 11 seed. And you know, one of the questions, like I said, we recorded this earlier, one of the questions that I had is, how significant is Purdue once again playing a double-digit seed? When you get to the Final Four, I just don't think it matters. Because, you know, whether it's George Mason, whether it's Butler, whether it doesn't matter. I mean, Butler had to navigate in their years going to the Final Four the same way that UConn had to this year. You have to win and navigate the bracket and win against really good teams regardless of their seed. What a remarkable story NC State has been. If you go back to the semifinals of the ACC tournament, I believe there were 5 seconds to play. Virginia player at the line. Virginia's up 3 in this game. The player hits 1 free throw, makes it a 4-point game with under 10 seconds to play. It's likely NC State is done in that game, and there's no way they're making the NCAA tournament. They had to win their conference tournament, and even to get to this point, because they had 14 losses in the regular season. And now, they were one of the teams, when the brackets came out, that people were intrigued by. This is the classic example of a team that gets hot at the end of the year, wins their conference tournament, comes in, and you wonder on two different spectrums. When you're playing that well, and you win your conference tournament, does the energy take the wind out of the sails when you get to the NCAA tournament, because you accomplished by getting there? Well, for NC State, it's been the exact opposite. It has fueled them. They are playing their best basketball, and it almost feels like every performance has been topping the next one. And it's not just the DJ Burns, who's a big-time star now. It's this entire team that has apparently locked in defensively and those sorts of things. The only thing is, I don't think they've seen anybody like Purdue. And you know what? You could say that for any team that faces Purdue, right? There's nobody like Purdue out there. And this is no disrespect to UConn. This is no disrespect to Alabama. But there are more apt comparisons for teams like that than there is for Purdue. And it's not just Zach Edey. It's the way that Purdue plays, and it's the way that Purdue has the discipline. I mean, Edey's a big part of it, obviously, because you can't really simulate 7-4. But at the end of the day, I think that that is a big-time driving force in this basketball game, is you can't really prepare for Purdue. And at the end of the day, does that make you win every single game? No, if you're Purdue. But it gives you a great opportunity if you play very well. I think at the end of the day, you win. And so, great run for NC State, but Purdue's rolling, and they're showing different versions of themselves as they kind of roll through the tournament as well. I would expect Purdue to win tomorrow. I would. I don't know if it's going to be a close game, whatever the case may be, but Edie's such a matchup problem. And one of the things that I think goes unnoticed, and we address it with Rob Blackman in the conversation we'll have and play for you coming up, is the amount of times he and this team goes to the free throw line. Huge advantage for Purdue. And in a game like this, when it's probably going to be pretty physical, a lot of energy, a lot of drive into the rim, advantage Purdue. Absolute advantage for Purdue. And the only real issue that Purdue would ever run into is if Zach Edey got in foul trouble. And so far, not an issue in the NCAA tournament. So far, in other games this season, I think he's only fouled out of one game. So that is a major advantage for Purdue, and we'll see how it all plays out at the end of the day. Thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live, as you always do. So lots to get to on the show today. Rob Blackman, we're going to play that interview for you coming up. He is from the Purdue Radio Network, does a fantastic job also on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network too. So we'll play that interview coming up. Also update you on what's going on in other Ball State sports. Talk a little bit more Final Four, etc. Glad you're with us on this Friday edition of the program. When we come back, we'll play the interview with Rob Blackman, Purdue Radio Network. That's next on the Power. Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Welcome back into the show. It is the Power on the Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, brought to you by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie. Online, wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you. 48 hours or less, it's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference. Nebo Road in Muncie, and online at wallsfurniture.com. As a recorded conversation, as Purdue in the Final Four, their matchup with NC State coming up on Saturday in the first of two games in Glendale, Arizona. And we're glad to speak with Rob Blackman from the Purdue Radio Network. So no plane issues. You got to Glendale safely. I know some other teams had some issues. Purdue's there. You're there. All is good in the world, huh?
Yes, boy, I was reading, Mark, about the horrendous travel issues that our good friends at UConn have had, and let me just say, I am glad we are not in that boat. We were about an hour delayed getting out here on Tuesday evening, but compared to what UConn has had to go through, I think an hour delay, that's okay with us.
So, obviously, this run, long-awaited, the celebration, in a lot of ways, Rob, and your call was absolutely outstanding for those that have had a chance to listen to it. But I think what's unique about this run is normally when you go to the Final Four, there's always a celebration that you made it to the Final Four teams. It truly is a significant, unique experience. Did you sense the Purdue reaction, the Purdue celebration was a little bit different because of everything they've gone through in the last half decade to a decade in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, a little bit of euphoria and a little bit of relief. A deep exhale is maybe the best way to put it, Mark. We finally made it. We were knocking at that door so many times in the last 40-some years, and to finally kick that door in, there was a sense of certainly of exhaling, as I said. You add on top of that, as you mentioned, this is a team that also lost to a 16 seed last year in an NCAA tournament. So this team had to wait an entire year to have a chance at redemption, no matter what Purdue would have done in the regular season. And let's be fair, Purdue had a heck of a regular season. Never fell out of the top five of the rankings all year, won the Big Ten, won the Maui Invite, all those things. No matter what Purdue did, they could have gone undefeated and beaten every team by 30 points. It would not have mattered because everyone had their focus on the NCAA tournament, and for valid reasons. So the fact that this team was able to validate themselves in NCAA tournament play and wipe away that terrible taste in their mouth from last year, big sense of relief involved with that, no doubt about it.
I think the other unique unique part, Rob, as you've chronicled and others have chronicled as well, normally, and you talk to a lot of coaches, I do as well, coaches like to keep years separate. You know, they like to say what happened last year happened last year. We're focused on this year. And it feels like Purdue, and largely from the standpoint of they have a very similar team from the year before, they've been very open that last year fueled them in a lot of ways. So throughout the regular season in this run, has that been mentioned daily, weekly, throughout the run to get to this point?
I don't know about how often it was mentioned, but it certainly was something that never left the minds of anyone involved with the program. And a good point by you as far as, you know, you're right. Most coaches do like to handle this stuff season to season, but this is basically the same team Purdue had last year. So you're not like you had a bunch of whole new faces where you could use that excuse, well, this is a new season and a new team. No, it may be a new season, but it's not a new team. Outside of David Jenkins Jr., who was done with his eligibility last year, he played off of the bench. And Brandon Newman, who transferred to Western Kentucky, this exact same team from last year. So, yes, it certainly was top of the mind awareness. Again, was it spoken about on a daily basis? That I could not tell you, but I can promise you, it was never lost on this team that was something that was always in the back of their minds. I was talking to one of our assistant coaches last Sunday night about the fact that no matter how good Purdue was this season, you never felt like they truly were able to enjoy the moment because of that dark cloud hanging over them from NCAA tournament play from a year ago. And I'm talking about, you know, going to Honolulu and winning that Maui Invitational or winning the Big Ten title by three games or, you know, having Zach Edey just constantly praises thrown his direction because of his outstanding play. He had all these things that, quite frankly, in most seasons you would have been celebrating, but you just never really felt like you could because, again, the questions were always, well, yeah, but, right? There was always that but. But what about last year in that NCAA tournament? So, yeah, I don't have a good answer for you for how often that was spoken about, but I can promise you it was always looming over them like a dark cloud.
It's Rob Blackman from the Purdue Radio Network on the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. I want to get to Zach Edey next because there's a couple of things. When people watch him and may not know him, obviously the opposing team talks a lot about he's the beneficiary of a lot of things, but at the same time, I think the flip side, Rob, is that he gets knocked around a ton, and his face never changes. He is always locked in, and you know, the most emotion that he really showed was that big bear hug to Matt Painter before he shook hands with Rick Barnes from Tennessee. He's so steady. So Rob, obviously you're with the team as we're recording this now. You're at practice. You're around the team a lot. For those that don't get to see Zach Edey off the floor, is he the same way steady and stoic on the floor like he is off the floor? Give us a little indication on that.
Pretty much what you see is what you get, Mark. I don't know if it's genetics. Maybe he just his parents did a great job of raising him. Maybe it's a combination of both. But he has the perfect disposition for the abuse that he takes as a big man in the game of basketball. Rarely gets emotional about anything. For those Purdue fans that might remember the Big Ten tournament semifinal game against Wisconsin, Zach was given a technical foul. It was actually a technical on the other player as well from Wisconsin. And that was really just for giving a stare down to the opponent. It's so rare that Zach even gets a technical foul thrown his direction. Matter of fact, Zach has only fouled out of one game this year, and that game didn't even count. It was the exhibition game at Arkansas. Wow. Way back in October. So that game didn't even count. But yes, perfect disposition, perfect demeanor for what he goes through. I was sharing this story with someone the other day. Zach if you just look at the per-game averages, Zach is going to be fouled 10 times a game. That's the average. That's how it works out. Sometimes more, sometimes less, but he will be fouled by the opponent 10 times a game. Now, if you're playing a really physical team like a Tennessee, a Michigan State, that number is going to go up significantly. But so he knows going into every game, he's getting fouled 10 times. Think about that. Most guys won't get fouled 10 times over the course of a month.
Right.
He gets it per game. So to answer your question, I know I'm being a little long-winded here, but to answer your question directly, the perfect disposition for the abuse that he takes, and I mentioned the abuse just on the floor as a guy getting played very physically from the opponent, he takes a lot of abuse from the opposing fan bases as well and does a great job of just letting that just roll right off his back and not paying any mind to it. So, again, good job by his parents. Good job genetically in the way he is wired, because he's wired perfectly for the position he's in.
He's been given a lot of credit for a lot of, and Matt Painter too, from the way he's developed footwork-wise and the dominance you see on both ends of the floor. But when he came in as a freshman, Rob, he was already, I think this goes underrated, he was already a really good free throw shooter. He shot 71% as a freshman, and now as a senior, he's shooting 71%. Now the biggest difference, obviously, from freshman to now, he played 28 games as a freshman, only started two, and now obviously starting and starring and possibly being the player of the year in the country again. As much abuse as he takes, I wonder, Rob, if nationally he doesn't get as much respect for the way he operates at the free throw line, because we're so used to bigs, right, shooting low 60%, high 50%. That's the other element that makes him so dangerous. Like you said, foul 10 times a game, he may go to the line 6 or 7 times, and when you shoot 71%, that is a major advantage Purdue, and they've used that in the tournament, right?
Without question. You think about the Hack-a-Shaq became such an important game plan for opposing teams while playing Shaquille O'Neal, both as a collegiate player and a professional, because he was a guy who was not very efficient at the foul line. Early in Zach's career, there was some of that. You saw some Hack-a-Shaq, if you would, on Shaquille O'Neal, as Shaquille O'Neal has dubbed him here in the last couple of weekends. But they quickly, what you're talking about, they quickly found out it doesn't work. I mean, if the guy's going to make 7 out of 10 free throws, then you're really running a high risk of fouling this guy and putting him at the line. Plus, you're going to foul out your big guys. So is it really worth it to just go out there and foul every time that opportunity presents itself? So without question, the free throw shooting has been a very big deal. And, one nice thing about Zach, a number of nice things, but he didn't really get interested in playing basketball till 7 years ago. So his shooting form is actually very, very good for a big man, because he's been taught the mechanics of shooting properly. He's not a kid who, was playing as a 5-year-old and was the biggest guy on the floor, so they just put him down under the basket. No one ever taught him how to actually shoot jump shots. Because he started so late in life, he's had some really, really good coaching from some folks who really know what they're doing. So he doesn't have, he didn't have a broke jump shot. He actually has a jump shot that actually looks like he knows what he's doing. So that plays to his favor, too. But, yeah, really efficient free throw shooter. And he's made a living at that line really the last 2 seasons just because he gets fouled so often.
Last year he went to the line 241 times combined. This year, 424 times. That is a remarkable, remarkable statistic. It's Rob Blackman from the Purdue Radio Network. But, obviously Zach Edey's the center of everything that happens for this basketball team. But what others have done surrounding him, and, a lot of Indiana, former Indiana high school basketball players that people are familiar with, one from Newcastle around here, Mason Gillis, and then, of course, Braden Smith from Westfield, and Fletcher Lawyer from the northern part of the state. The development of Edey gets a lot of coverage there, and specifically when it comes to Lawyer and Smith, who were freshmen last year, thrust into bigger roles, the development going into year number 2, that spike that they've taken and the confidence they've taken, what has stood out the most, as it seems like as they continue to win in this tournament, those guys specifically are getting even more and more confidence, Rob?
Well, and I think part of it is, you know, they're just so used to winning. Think about, you know, Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer have been full-time starters since their freshman season. They started every single game they've ever played in, and here they are as sophomores about to play in their 38th game of the season. They've started every single game, and they've lost 10 games total over 2 years. 10 total. So
wow.
These guys, they're winners. They're used to winning, and that's really, and so in a lot of ways, it's really all they know is winning. So that plays a big part of that confidence level. Are they better this year? Spock, talking about those two players specifically, are they better late in the season this year than they were last year? Yes. Yes, they are. They're a year older. They're a year stronger. They're a year wiser. Fletcher Lawyer in the month of March shot 59% from three. And if you take away that game against Tennessee last Sunday, he ends up shooting, I think, 69% from three for the month of March. So, I mean, if you're putting those kind of numbers up in the three-point line in the month of March, you're probably doing something right. And he's a high-frequency shooter, high-volume three-point shooter. Braden Smith, I mean, come on, first-team All-Big Ten, Associated Press All-American honorable mention as a sophomore, at 6 feet, 175 pounds. Yeah, for those that haven't paid close attention, Braden Smith doesn't really look the part. Like, if you're at the city park playing pickup and you're picking teams and you don't know anything about Braden Smith, he's probably not getting picked first. He might get picked last, which would be a big mistake for the team that didn't pick him, obviously. But the fact that they have come as far as they have, again, only sophomores. That to me, if I'm a Purdue fan, that's as encouraging as anything, is you still have two more years left with these guys. And if they're going to stay on their current trajectory of just losing 10 games for 2 years, then this team's going to win a whole bunch of games here for the next few seasons, I think it looks like.
Final one for you, Rob. From the outside looking in and just watching this team, you know, obviously with the coaches that you talk to and we talk to as well, you know, you ask the question, how do you do the balance where you're locked into what you do, but obviously you have different matchups that you're trying to take away from the opponents to get there? I just get a sense that obviously you've got to have a game plan kind of change around who you're playing, but I get the sense that Purdue is just so locked into what they're doing and their attack method and want the other team to adjust. So long-winded way of asking this, Rob, the balance of Purdue really focusing on what they do and forcing the opponent to stop it and how they filter in when it comes to NC State, different matchups that make NC State successful.
Yeah, so I would answer that with a pretty simple answer here, Mark. The one thing that Matt Painter has harped on all season to this team is, and I've never heard him say this before. I've been doing this 19 years. It's the only time I've ever heard him tell this to a team. But he has told them repeatedly this year, you guys are good enough that if you don't beat yourselves, there's no one in the country that can beat you. You're that good. You don't need the lucky whistle from an official. You don't need to have one of those outrageous shooting nights, you know, where you shoot 80% from three. You don't need anything like that. You have enough talent on this team that if you just play your game to the best of your ability, you're winning the game. And one number he always talks about is the turnovers. Purdue this season, when they have 13 turnovers or less in a game, undefeated, 27-0. Now, if that number gets 14 or higher, they're 6-4. So I have heard him tell this team specifically numerous times, guys, you keep your turnovers at 13 or less, you're winning the game. And I heard him say the other day, he said, look, in the past, I've told my teams, hey, if we can keep the turnovers to 13 or less, we're going to have a chance to win. No. There's no chance. The chance is no longer in the equation here. You keep it at 13 unless you're winning, because you're so good offensive efficiency wise, defensive wise, rebounding wise, free throw shooting wise, 3-point shooting wise. You're winning the game. You're simply winning right. The game. You're that good. You're that talented. Which, think about that. You rarely hear a coach just tell his team, "Hey, if you know you play your game, you're going to win." Most will say, "We play our game, guys. We're going to have a chance." No. Matt Painter's told this group all year, "You play your game, we are winning. We're just flat out winning the game."
Yeah, and certainly proven that throughout the year. Rob Blackman will be on the call of the Final Four game with Purdue and NC State. That comes just after 6:30 on Saturday in Glendale, Arizona, for a spot in the national championship game on Monday. Rob, great to catch up with you. Have a great call. We'll be listening.
Okay, Mark. Thanks for having me.
We're a little over in this segment, but a great conversation with Rob Blackman recorded earlier in the week. We're back after this on the Power on the Talk of Muncie, WMUN. Yes, welcome back. As always, presented in part by Sheriff Goslin Roofing. Your visitor to protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Goslin Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com. Interesting, a great conversation with Rob Blackman, Purdue Radio Network. Final segment of the week, by the way, right here. And one of the things that I found very curious about that particular interview is when you watch Purdue, you get a sense that they play at their pace. They play the way they want to play and inflect that style in the game. And you've heard us reference that at different times about teams would like to get there each and every game. You know, hey, what's the balance between what you do and what the other team does? And you get the sense when you watch Purdue, they're in control of every aspect of the game. Now, a lot of that's happened in the NCAA tournament, even when it was tied against Tennessee. It really never felt like Purdue was out of control. The only reason Tennessee really stayed in that basketball game had to do with Dalton Connect and the shots that he was making for Tennessee. And then, you know, Purdue got in a lull there offensively where, you know, they made their own mistakes. But it never really felt like Tennessee put the right amount of pressure on Purdue. It's just an opinion. And so when I watch them play, it really feels like they have the confidence that, hey, if we play our game, there is nobody that can beat us. And so, you know, Rob alluded to that Matt Painter has never said that about a team, that, hey, if we play the way we are capable of playing and we do what we do really well, there's nobody that can beat us in the country. Now, most coaches will say, hey, we feel like we have enough where it doesn't matter who we play, we can beat any team in the country. Most coaches have that confidence, but when you tell your team that and you say, hey, we play the way we play, there ain't anybody that can beat us, that's a huge power. I mean, it is. And you really get the sense of that when you watch this particular Purdue team. Okay, hey, you want to take Zach Edey away in the first half? Cool. You know, we'll knock down shots with Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, etc. And then things will open up inside, and then the big boy can go to work and get to the free throw line the average of 11 times per game that he does. I mean, it's just, it's really, really hard to defend them. It's got to be. And so I think NC State's going to have trouble with that. I do think if Purdue ends up matching up with UConn, that'll be a massive, massive challenge. But some part of it, though, makes me think they'll be just fine against UConn because of that exact deal, that they play at their pace and they do a better job than anybody else at inflecting their style in the basketball game. I know that sounds incredibly simplistic, but sometimes there's a lot of execution and simplicity, I guess, is the best way to say it. So, really good conversation with Rob Blackman from the Purdue Radio Network. So, coming up this weekend, we have that. We have the Ball State football spring game that happens at Schumann Stadium coming up tomorrow, 11 o'clock at Schumann Stadium, and free admission for the community to see, you know, this team. And there's going to be a lot of players you recognize and others that you don't. And so that'll be great to see. Ball State volleyball, men's volleyball, wins a share of the MEVA title for a third straight season. Donan Cruz and his crew rolling. More to come with that. And Ball State baseball in a battle with Miami of Ohio at last check. They were still in the lead in game number one against Miami of Ohio. So big thanks to Rob Blackman from the Purdue Radio Network. Appreciate his time. I know it's been a very busy week for him. Looking forward to seeing how that all plays out. By the way, top of the seventh inning, Ball State 3, Miami of Ohio 2 in baseball in Oxford, Ohio. Enjoy your weekend. So many community events. Take advantage of them. We are back with you Monday at 4 right here on the Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN.